Welcome to episode 23 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. I'm Eric Barzeski, and joining me as always, Jeff Smith from Washington. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Eric.
How are you today?
I am doing excellent.
Well, let's move into our first topic in Off the Tee. Michelle Wee has made it through the local qualifying of the U.S. Open. She'll play at Canoe Brook in the sectional qualifying in Summit, New Jersey. We didn't really give her too much of a... I guess we kind of both said local qualifying, she may make it. But now she's on to the next stage. She qualifies there, she's in the U.S. Open. Will she qualify?
Well, I wouldn't put it past her. I mean, she won the local qualifying.
You're changing your tone now?
Well...
This was a local qualifier in Hawaii. I don't see a lot of people flying over to local qualify in Hawaii.
I can't even remember what I said last week. But, you know, what I feel right now is... It's possible. Again, this we have to remember this is the U.S. Open, so...
Right.
Yeah.
She played on a... You know, it wasn't a terribly long course. It was the Arnold Palmer course at Turtle Bay, which if you watched the Big Break 5, you saw that course. So it wasn't a terribly difficult course, but the wind was up, and she shot an even par 72 to lead the qualifier and get in, obviously. So she'll play in the June 5th, so not too far away, 36-hole sectional qualifier at Canoe Brook in Summit, New Jersey. We'll have to dispatch Raffy from our forum over to check it out, his girlfriend.
As he
believes. So
that is really creepy.
In his mind, the 16-year-old with the 40-year-old dude. Oh well.
Raffy, you're one of a kind, buddy.
You are one of a kind. We'll have to dispatch him though to get a first-hand account. But I don't really see her, you know, I mean, on the Grey Goose 19th hole, Bob Valvano was on there and he said, well, she has a chance. She's in the field. So by definition, she has a chance. Steve Dumaeg, of course, was saying, absolutely not. No way. No chance in heck. Period. Not going to happen at all.
I have to wonder, is she trying to be the Amelia Earhart of our generation here by trying to qualify in all these men's events and play on the men's tour? What exactly is she trying to accomplish by this?
Tilting at windmills a bit here.
Yeah, well, what I think is unfortunate about this whole thing is that I think she's going to find the further and further that she goes along, and as we observe her over time, assuming that she continues to pursue these men's events, that victory is going to be out of reach for her, and it's going to be really unfortunate when we all look back. Hey, you know, she could have accomplished such and such, you know, won certain events on the women's tour, but she, you know, real performance has been out of her reach. You know, 5-10 years down the road, if she continues on this path.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens when she's granted LPGA membership. Does she drop all the guy stuff, or what happens then? It'll be interesting to see. You know, part of me thinks she may drop all the men's events, except for maybe the Sony Open, and play the women's events from then on out. You know, in a year, we may know more, but until then, best of luck. First half of the year in the PGA Tour is almost over. Next week ends the first 5 months of the golf season, with five more to go. We got an article here we'll link to in our show notes on our site, thesandtrap.com. But we're going to tell you what they say and then give our own opinions. First up, the award for Player of the Year at this point. They offer Phil Mickelson. I'd have to concur. He's won the only major so far. Won another tournament before that. Nobody's racked up more wins than him, so Phil Mickelson for me. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Phil Mickelson. There are no three-time winners on the tour thus far.
So. And a lot of rookies this year. Five or so out of the 16 events, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah, and then, of course, Phil Mickelson's 13-stroke advantage over the field
right
prior to the Masters. That's impressive. So, yeah, he's a standout so far.
That's right. Shot of the year. What do you think?
Carter Webb, yeah, they refer to Carter Webb here. I believe that that would be a good shot of the year. For me, I'm kind of, that's probably the biggest shot of the year, the most decisive, deciding shot of the year.
Right.
Yeah, I've got a few favorite shots, but that'd be the...
Well, see, my shot of the year may be Michelle Wee opting to chip on that hole instead of putt, when she needed to do was get up and down for a birdie to get in the playoff and not doing it. But the honorable mention here in this article is Chris Couch's long chip in after, you know, making a mess the last couple of holes at the New Orleans to win his first PGA Tour victory. Pretty much the only shot in recent memory that's caused an announcer to say, holy shit, on the air. So, Rookie of the Year here. They offer J.B. Holmes and Camilo Villegas. You know, I like Camilo Villegas, but he hasn't won yet. J.B. Holmes has, so I give the edge to J.B.
I'm with you there. A lot of people feel that Villegas's record over time it has been better, but I'm going to go with Holmes for the victory.
Okay, J.B. Holmes, Rookie of the Year thus far. How about Sophomore Slump of the Year? Obviously, Sean O'Hare, it's not the award here, but Lucas Glover's having a decent year, and Sean O'Hare's really kind of slumped this year so far.
Sean O'Hare, Jason Gore?
Jason Gore, that could possibly be as well. I don't know if he qualified for Rookie of the Year last year, but certainly not having a stellar year like he did last year. He's very streaky, though, so we'll see what happens if he turns it on. Tournament of the year so far.
And injured.
Injured,
yeah. This weekend.
Tournament of the year, Jeff. What's your vote?
Tournament of the year? The whole of today?
Of the year, 2006.
2006, the whole thing.
Yep.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with the Masters, simply because it's a great event. There was a lot of controversy surrounding the distance and all of that.
Right.
I thought it was a great tournament, and that's going to be the standout for me.
Yeah, this article says the Dinah Shore. As much as I want to put the LPGA on, you know, some kind of pedestal, really, it's kind of sitting in the child seat in the back of the car, so I'm going to have to say the Masters as well. Worst tournament of the year. tough to go with this one. Byron Nelson Championship leads the vote here. Bad date plus bad course equals trouble. I don't know, you know, anything with Byron Nelson in it can't be all that bad, I figure.
Mm-hmm.
What's your vote for worst tournament of the year?
Worst tournament of the year so far? Man, I'm going to have a tough time picking out one worst tournament. I really enjoyed the first-time winners. I enjoyed the Byron Nelson. But I'm going to have a tough time picking out the worst.
I may throw in the WGC match play. It was a kind of a boring final pairing, and neither of the players played very well. Plus, they were held up by the group in front, so not even exciting TV. Just a thought. I'm sure I could come up with a better worst tournament, though, if I really had to think about it. I tend to block them from my memory, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Best putt.
Aaron Baddeley.
Yeah.
Aaron Baddeley, his putt to win.
From about 6 feet or so?
From about 6 feet, you bet.
Getting
He's
up and
the
down.
New guy.
Okay.
He got up and down, did it. Jim Furyk, we expect that guy to win.
Okay, well, my vote for best putt is Freddie Couples, his three-footer that he three-putted on 14, the Masters.
It was the potential best?
It was the best putt for Phil Mickelson that could have happened at that point.
Yeah, good way to look at it.
That's right. Worst putt. Here we go. I think we'll all be in agreement here, though. It's either Fred Couples or Greg Owen missing three-putting from 40 inches at the Big Hill.
Greg Owen was sweating bullets. The difference between Freddie and Greg Owen there is that Freddie is Mr. Cool despite three-putting.
Right.
Greg Owen
was leading the tournament until three-putting on the 71st hole.
Handed it away.
Just walked around the hole and wrapped that again and missed.
Mm-hmm.
So, lips out on the 18th hole too then, so... Biggest surprise so far this year?
Biggest surprise would have to be all of these first-time winners.
I mean, yep.
We've got five first-time winners so far.
Yeah, I think I may be low on that. It might be like seven, but five
is that
sounds
right?
About right.
Okay, well...
I'm not going to name them all or something, but it's at least five. A lot of first-time winners.
Me.
As we said, only Tiger and Phil have two wins. Nobody else in the top five has two wins. Vijay doesn't have a win yet. Ernie doesn't have a win yet. Jim Furyk has a win and moved him into the top five. And then Retief Goosen without a win so far. So something needs to be shaken up at the top there.
It does. Things are definitely changing.
Get on the winning side there, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Smallest surprise. You know, biggest surprise, I may go back, though. Biggest surprise, I may lump Annika Sorenstam's slump in there. Again, if you can call it a slump. She's won once and she just missed a cut. She's had four top tens or something, but... A slump for her.
Right.
Smallest surprise. They list John Daly's gambling losses, I suppose. But, you know, what would be your smallest surprise?
Smallest surprise? Vijay Singh slowing down.
Okay.
Yeah, breakneck speed. And he's finally kind of, boy, falling off the map just a little bit.
Fair enough. Our last topic in Off the Tee. Phil Mickelson, obviously, the player was just named Player of the Month. It's the ninth time he's ever earned Player of the Month. How much do you think Phil has left in him this year? Where do you think he'll stand at the end of the year? Leading the money list, two majors.
I wouldn't be surprised if Phil has four wins. I would be surprised if he has seven.
Okay.
I think that he's going to pull in another two. I don't think the odds of him winning another major are really great this year.
He's very streaky, so never won more than one major in a year before. I'm with you there. Four tournaments, two more. Probably not going to win another major. Seven would be pushing it. Seven would be a pretty tremendous year, really, especially since we're halfway through and he's only got two. So we'll be right back after this ad from Titleist and Chip Shot segment from Golf Gods. Stay with us.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your Titleist.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, hooray for the red and the black. The word on the street is that the new TaylorMade TP Red and Black balls will present a formidable challenge to the Titleist Pro V1 line. TaylorMade's TP designation, which stands for Tour Preferred, is the branding given to all of TaylorMade's premium equipment. With the launch of the ball, TaylorMade becomes a player in the golf ball market under its main brand, extending the TaylorMade brand into every area of equipment and matching Titleist and Callaway in that full-line strategy. Both the red and black are three-piece balls that employ the ND V4 core, multi-blend ionomer mantle, and ultra-thin thermoset urethane cover. TaylorMade boasts both balls offer accelerated speed with high launch and low spin off the driver, plus high spin around greens. The main difference is the TP Red is geared to produce low launch off irons, while the TP Black is geared to produce a high launch off fairway woods, hybrids, and irons. Players seeking more distance in the irons should probably take a look at the TP Black. Golfers seeking more control should consider the TP Red. For more information on the TP Red and Black golf balls, follow the links in this week's show notes or check out the exhaustive array of information on these golf balls at thesandtrap.com. Now back to this week's podcast.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, it's actually one I started. I called it your fallback flaws, and I believe that everyone has kind of a few flaws that seem to pop up time and time again. In mine, I listed them in the forum. But basically, you have a couple flaws. Even the pros have these flaws. You know, they say, when I start hitting the ball well, it's usually because I tend to something. You know, bad weight shift, their head moves, their grip is off, you know, something like that. They're constantly monitoring their fundamentals, things like that. Jeff, your fallback flaws are what?
Well, I listed a few. The biggest one for me is follow through. I really need to follow through. As you offered a tip to me on the forum, maybe we can include that too. I tend to kind of quit at impact, stab at the ball, so I really need to get my right arm straight out there and follow through and bring it all the way around.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me.
It's important for people, I think, to understand what their fallback flaws are, to write them down so that, you know, when they're suffering, they can kind of go through a mental checklist or a physical checklist and say, am I doing this? I think I'm doing that pretty good. Am I doing this? Oh, maybe that's it. Just have the two or three or four most common flaws that pop up in your game, and you can always fall back on them. The fixes that you found work for them.
Yeah, and I really would encourage folks to stop by this topic. I think, you know, people really enjoy having a look at this, seeing what other people are saying, and then, as you say, when you're able to see them, then you know in a positive sense what you need to do to correct it. And that is very, very helpful. I enjoyed that forum topic.
And I think writing them down forces you to think about them too. Some days you mess up on the first hole, you mess up on the second hole, you mess up on the third hole, you just say, oh, it's not my day, and you kind of give up. I'm not a big fan of fixing yourself on the golf course, but if you can, not when you're swinging, if you can just take practice swings and say, you know what, I think I might be doing this, and get one swing thought that might help fix one of those flaws that pop up from time to time, then that's okay. So I think writing them down and forcing yourself to think about them is a good thing. Again, if you want to share those with other people as a means of doing that, great, stop by our forum, we'll link to it in our show notes. We'll be back after this ad from Titleist.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. Greg Norman, a fan or a proponent of bifurcation of the golf ball, has apparently bifurcated his love life. He's splitting up from longtime wife Laura Norman. Two say the split is amicable, but the great white shark will be swimming alone, apparently. There's a picture on this in this article. We'll link to it, of course, in our show notes. And my thought when I saw this picture was that I would divorce anyone with a haircut like that. What are your thoughts, Jeff?
I do think... And thanks for asking, that she is stuck in the late 80s or something, because that's pretty large hair. I mean, she's from Australia. I thought that was the Southern Belle that wore hair like that.
I don't know. It's the the Southern frizz that wears hair like that. So
okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a surprise. We were talking off the air. You know, I really see there's almost a code of silence on the PGA Tour about these kind of relationships. There's not much said here. All you're going to hear from me, Greg Norman says, is no comment.
Right.
And I think it seems like the the media respects that, right, for the most part.
Someone else that apparently got divorced somewhere along the line is Fred Couples. We've talked about him before. But in an article we'll link to, of course, in our show notes, it says, a personal question. The PGA Tour guide last year listed your wife and children. This year, no mention of family. Fred responds by saying, not much to say, except it's over. I'm a single man again. Fred divorcing his longtime wife.
Ties.
Right? Fred's a single guy again. He's on the prowl. But he's also on the prowl. He's got some things to say about the Ryder Cup. He's up for a captaincy if he should get one, perhaps after Paul Azinger or so. And he's hoping to play himself onto the team this year. What do you think his chances are?
Oh, Fred is a great player. You know, he keeps playing like he did at the Masters, and we're going to see him on the team. I love it. He's great under pressure.
Beat BJ like Singh in the President's Cup last year?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great match play player, so it'd be great. I think he could do it.
Okay, and Fred had one other nice little snippet to say. He was asked, how are things going on the PGA Tour? He responds by saying, I don't understand the new TV deal. We signed for 15 years with the Golf Channel? Isn't there a number between 1 and 15? Did the NBA sign for 15 years with TNT? How'd we lose ESPN? I also don't get that. What if ESPN decides in 3 years they want golf again? What does the PGA Tour tell them? Sorry, we were with the Golf Channel until 2021.
Yeah, we were asking the same thing.
Right.
You know, 15 years. That's a long time.
That's a long time. Maybe I'll be like in my 30s. No. I'll be in my 40s. I can't fathom that. My goodness.
Yeah. Is that possible?
I don't know. It's apparently possible to hit people on the golf course and not be punished for it. A Supreme Court ruling has determined that accidentally hitting someone on the golf course with a golf ball is not your problem. People assume the risk of possibly getting hit by a stray golf ball when they decide to play golf. Good news for you, I suppose, Jeff.
Well, thank you so much. You know, that's just the kind of guy Eric is, looking out for me.
Right.
So I mean, we all knew this. We all knew this before. This is just almost making official what I think was already understood.
Right. It's common knowledge that not every golf shot played by a golfer goes exactly where he intends it to go, the ruling said, adding that there wouldn't be much sport in the sport of golf if golf balls went exactly where the player wanted. Thank you, Supreme Court. This is our taxpayer dollar at work.
That's why we pay them.
Tax dollar at work. That's right. So you're not allowed to intentionally hit someone with a golf ball, though. That's still illegal. So
darn it. What about the cart that picks up the balls at the range?
What about that commercial where the guy is caught staring at that other guy's daughter
and
the
guy? That is really funny.
Yeah, I think he could get. Is that intentional or not? He's just got good grips.
That's the grips do it.
That's right. 57. It's a number we associate with Heinz ketchup. Someone shot a 57.
Amazing.
On 18 holes. He didn't even like quit after 14. So.
Well, and the word is that this golf course was pretty tough. People are real impressed.
This is his not name, a par 3 course.
Yeah. Can we pronounce his last name?
Chris Wasilowicz.
Wasilowicz. Yeah, good.
Sure.
Yeah. So he's gone out there and carted a 57 on a tough course. So I'm impressed. He's my hero.
He's your hero. I wonder if he bought drinks for people after the round.
Probably not. That's why he's my hero.
That's right. What do you prefer? A first-time winner or a big name? Jeff.
What do I prefer?
This is your article.
This is my article here. You know, I don't mind a first-time winner. I love to see these guys. They pull it out for the very first time. And to me, there's an excitement there that doesn't exist when you have one of the well-known guys winning. I mean, we love to see Tiger Woods. Everybody loves to see Phil Mickelson win. People would have gone crazy had Phil Mickelson or had Freddie Couples won the Masters. So, you know, the stories are there that impress us and drag us in. But I love to see the look on the faces of these first-time winners. I've really enjoyed that at the beginning of this season.
Yeah, there's some excitement there. And the old saying is that you have to win your first before you can win your 30th. So, you know, you got to get that first win under your belt before you can become a star. So it's tough to say, you know, Brett Wetterich, you could call him a flash in the pan, but it's too early. He just won last week. So give him time. But in 10 years, if that's still his only win, then, you know, you kind of look back and you won't remember that tournament. But if it's the first of 30 wins on the PGA Tour, you know, it's something impressive. So it depends on how you look at it, I suppose, for me, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But there's a lot of first-time winners this year, and I'd like to see some bigger names playing, but they're not even really necessarily playing this year, so they're not even getting the chance to win. Tiger's home with his dad. In fact, Tiger Woods is going to be skipping the memorial this year, we've learned. Today was the last day to commit to the memorial, and Tiger Woods' name was not on the list of people who have accepted the invitation. So apparently he won't be playing in the memorial, which we both, or at least I, projected he would play as a tune-up for the U.S. Open 2 weeks after. It's unlikely he'll play in the Barclays Classic the week before the U.S. Open, typically not his M.O. and preparing for majors. The U.S. Open, of course, begins June 15th. Should he have possibly played in the Memorial here, or what?
Well,
does this hurt his chances at playing well at the U.S. Open?
Yes and no. Tiger has had a track that he follows to get ready for these events, and it's proven to work, and work well.
But none of his tracks have involved the death of his father, either.
No, and that's where, you know, we've got to give Tiger Woods all the space in the world. I mean, it's his life. He has to live it. He's got to deal with this in his own way. The best thing for Tiger to do is to walk through it step by step, and whenever he comes back, it's his decision, and that's the best move for Tiger Woods.
Right. Well, I wish him luck, and I hope to see him, certainly hope to see him at the U.S. Open. There's certainly no talk that he will miss it. I certainly think that he'll have his work cut out for him, not having played a competitive round. Phil Mickelson, of course, takes the opposite approach, as we've seen a lot of the times, in playing the week before a major to try to, you know, have a competitive round under his belt. So this is certainly not unusual for Tiger to take the week off, but missing the Memorial is a big deal, I think. So it really tells us he's still feeling down about his father's death.
Yeah. Well, the question we have before us now is it tougher than ever to win for the first time on the PGA Tour? We've been talking about some of these first-time winners. Is it tougher than ever now to win for the first time? Is a guy like, you know, Wetherick going to...
Is it tougher? I don't know. We've had, you know, five or seven first-time winners this year, so apparently not, right?
Apparently it isn't, and I think, you know, the question is for who? Is it tougher for you and me? Well, of course. But I think that there's such a, almost a parody now of just raw talent. You have all of this talent that's being honed on the nationwide tour. By the time you make it to the PGA, these guys are just on par with each other, and I think that's what we're seeing is a greater pool of talent. So it's more likely now that a first-time winner is going to do it. It's harder for the individual in one sense because there are so many other good players, but it's easier because you have so much new raw talent there.
That about sums it up for me. One last thing I want to slip in here at the end. Bubba Watson set the distance debate on fire again, firing a first-round 65 at the Colonial, kind of a short hitter's track with lots of lefts and rights, and you got to work the ball. His driving average in the first round, 355.8 yards. Bubba Watson then proceeded to crap all over the fire and put it out by shooting 77 in the second round to miss the cut. Right. After his... You know, he still hit it out there far, but he had over two putts per green in regulation.
And wasn't his green, or pardon me, wasn't his fairways?
He hit two fairways.
The first round, it was something like
71%, yeah.
Crazy, that's awesome for his
And the
distance.
Second day, he hit two fairways.
Yeah,
so
ouch.
Distance is great when you can hit 71% of the fairways. Distance not so great when you hit two of them. 65, 77. Thank you for putting that debate to rest, Bubba. And we're putting this episode 23 to rest. Thank you for joining us once again on the Golf Talk Podcast. Again, I'm Eric Barteski, Jeff Smith in Washington, and we wish you fairways and greens, and certainly don't crap on any fires, because you might burn your butt. Take care until next week. Bye-bye.
See you next time.